Year of Transitions. This is the last Sunday of the year, obviously, and some of you guys know this, but I want to remind you that everything changes in life. I don't know if you guys are going to agree with me on this, but everything, nothing is permanent. And I got a couple of things that I want to show you this morning that actually proves my case. Some iconic figures in our world today. LeBron James first comes into the league back in the early 2000s. Not currently. He looks different, wouldn't you agree? He was an 18-year-old when he first came, and he transformed the world of sports, literally. I mean, this guy, his influence. But look at the change. That's what social media does for you today. You guys recognize that? No? You've never seen LeBron James before? Well, introduce him to you. Maybe this is more kind of a iconic to you. And back in the day, for the Terminator movies. But look at the changes. Same characters. Things change. Would you agree? Things change. In 2018, things have changed. And for 2019, also things are going to change. Back in the time of the scriptures, there was no social media. There were no way to do pictures or to do some sort of a graphic, visual reflection over the transition of time. There were other ways to measure some of these things. This morning, what I want to do, I'm going to ask you to think about the reflection of a man by the name of Moses. That if you can see Moses transition his life, and maybe through the reflection of images or experiences, Moses goes into Psalm 90. If you have a Bible, go to Psalm 90. In Psalm 90, which is attributed to Moses as an author, it's kind of a reflection over where he has been and where he is out today. Now, the beauty of the gospel, and this is what I want you to think about for a second, because if I were to give you the mic, you have a way to illustrate your journey of 2018. Maybe your journey of the 2010, this decade, because we're coming to the end of the decade. Maybe the last 20 years. Maybe for you is maybe the last 40 years. Whatever the case may be, you might have a way to do this. What Moses is going to do, and this is why this is so appealing to me, is he's not going to reflect over his journey. He's going to reflect over God. He's going to focus on the person of God. And he begins by basically saying the following. If you have a Bible, I want you to go to Psalm 90. And look at how he begins this conversation. He begins with the personal name of God. I don't know if you remember Moses, but this is the guy that basically at age 80, he's encountered with a talking, what is it? Just plant, tree, that is burning. And in this conversation of the burning bush, he's having this conversation, and eventually he's going to ask, who do I tell them, Egypt, who do I tell Egypt that has sent me? And God replies, I am who I am. So look at Moses beginning the conversation, reflecting over the eternality of God, that everything transitions except God. He begins by saying, Lord, you have been our dwelling place. Now, again, this is Moses, Psalm 90. If anything about Moses, you think of Moses, if you can picture blocks, three blocks. If I could go back to something like this or something like this, you can think of blocks in their lives or experiences. I don't have pictures of Moses to show you, but if you can think of three blocks, you're going to get the first block of Moses as the prince of Egypt. Remember where he was born? He was born in the middle of royalty. I don't have time to go into the details, but the first 40 years, his royalty. The second block is going to be the block of simply wandering by profession or vocation. He is a shepherd. So he goes from the top of society, he goes to the lowest. Shepherds, lowest of the lowest, just vocation-wise. And then at age 80, as I said, the third block that I don't have to show you, but the third block, he is the founder of a nation. That's who he is. He is the founder of a nation. He's the giver of the law. He is God's appointed prophet, God's appointed leader. So think in those terms that what he is going to tell you from a Hebrew boy that becomes Egyptian worldview-wise, maybe not his skin color, but worldview-wise, he's an Egyptian, because royalty, from a guy that is dealing with sheep and just shepherding, you know, the in-laws' herds. And then he goes into dealing with about 2.7 million people in the wilderness, complaining people, you know, griping people, difficult people. He describes God at a very personal level, as a guy who knew what is called nomadic life, moving around. He says, you are our dwelling place. Well, what does that mean? This is what it means, that you throughout all, now again, come back with me to the blocks, three blocks for Moses, right? Two for this guy, two for this guy, but for Moses are three. And you, some of you know this, but in the Bible, a generation, this word generation, literally involves 40 years. Every 40 years is a generation. So Moses, first 40 years, prince of Egypt. Second generation for Moses, shepherding the little, you know, endeavor as a shepherd, shepherding the sheep. And then the last generation for him is the generation of the wilderness, leading the people of God through the wilderness. So when he talks about the dwelling place that he is, a reflection of the eternality of God, listen to the language that although this is the God of the scriptures, this is Jehovah God, he describes it at a very personal level. And look at what it means by this dwelling place throughout generations. That implies that before the mountains, verse 2, before the mountains were born. So look at the contrast, please. So he's moving from the character of God into something tangible, which is a dwelling place. Again, in his mind, he can go back into Egypt, and through his Egyptian life, he saw God at work. He goes into the shepherding experience of being a fugitive. He was an outlaw, outcast for 40 years. He's still the dwelling place. And then he goes into the wilderness of leading people for 40 years, and he's the dwelling place. So he goes from this tangible reality into now the component of beyond this reality. When he talks about the throughout all generations, he's moving beyond. And to illustrate this component of beyond generations, beyond time, he comes back into this component of time. And he says, before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world. And then again, listen to the language, from everlasting to everlasting. From everlasting to everlasting, you are the Lord. Your character never changes. You are the same. So if you're filling up your little cards on your handouts, this is what it means. Moses has come to the place that he has known. He was the child. He was supposed to be the guy that is supposed to go into the throne of the most powerful nation in the world, Egypt. He was supposed to. He was the prince of Egypt. That wasn't the case. This is the guy that is protecting the sheep in the wilderness from the safety, from the component of being protecting those sheep from animals and the attacks. And then he goes into the wilderness for the last 40 years, the last generation, and now he's battling all these armies. He's walking through the wilderness for the purpose to take the people from slavery into the promised land. So all that I'm trying to tell you is that Moses did not embrace God simply as a safe place. That if you declare this morning that he is Lord, and that you see God as the God throughout all generations, and if you were to proclaim his majesty through creation, and eventually to see the eternality of God, does not imply that he's going to be a safe place. Although he is a safe place, the point of the story is that he is your refuge. In other words, safety translates as is the absence of trouble. And if I can go back into Moses again, the first 40 years, a lot of trouble. He had to flee from Egypt. The second part of the experience is more of a simply minding his own business, trying to create that safety on that. But then he goes into the wilderness for 40 years, the last 40 years, and what he has learned is that God is our refuge. God is not the absence of problems, but God is literally the place where I can come when I'm in trouble. He is the place. He is the shield. He is the protector. Now, again, think about for a second, because we're kind of at the end of this season of holidays and celebration. What makes this season special, besides that is a calendar kind of a component, but the reality is that there is a place where we gather. There's a place where we gather, which is home, and people come and gather together. So it's the component of a refuge as in the place where God dwells, and you get to dwell with God. Now, this is Moses reflecting again. I don't have the time to give you the entire Psalm 90, but once you focus not on yourself, not on your journey, not on your, you know, experience of marriage or single life or whatever the case may be, but you focus on God and you get to the place where God becomes personal, refuge, identity, which, by the way, quick parenthesis, this is the same guy that did not make the promised land. So Moses never knew, I guess, the concept of stability. He was always on the move. He was always on the move. So in a sense, what I'm trying to tell you is that the win for the people of God wasn't necessarily the promised land. It was God himself. For Moses, it wasn't simply just the leading of the people. It was God himself. I hope in today you can come into the experience to know that the win for this year wasn't simply the blessings that God gave you, but it's God himself. God is always the win. Now, when you get to that place, and this is where I need you to get a Bible, because it's not going to be on the screen, and I'm just going to read it for you. I want you to go into the next verses in the Bible. So this is, I just read to you verses 1 and 2. I want you to read with me verses 3 and following. Because once you look at God, look at what happens next. Once you look at the eternality of God and you focus on who God is, now you have the freedom to focus on who you are. But what you're going to discover on who you and I are is not very fun. Look at what the Bible says. This is verse 3. Same chapter, chapter 90. You turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. So again, from the eternality to now, we are transients. Verse 4, look at what it means. 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. So he's going into confinements of time. Verse 5, yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning. Verse 6, in the morning it springs up new, but by evening it is dried and withered. Verse 7, we are consumed by your anger. We are terrified by your indignation. You, verse 8, you have set our iniquities before you. You have set our secret sins in the light of your presence. All of our days, verse 9, all of our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan. Look at verse 10. Our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures. Yet, look at the yet, the best of them are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. Look at verse 11. If only we knew the power of your anger. Your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due. Watch the language, please. If we only knew the power of your anger. What is he implying? That we were ignorant of your anger. That we were ignorant of who you were and who you are. So your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due. Look at verse 12. So because we're ignorant, what does he say in verse 12? Teach us. In the past, we were not teachable. In the past, we thought that we knew it all. So teach us to number our days that we may gain, what is it? A heart of wisdom. What's the opposite of wisdom? Foolishness. So if God is not teaching me, my destination is foolishness. It's craziness. Watch this, please. And here is what I want you to focus on, verse 13. So again, before I show you verse 13 on the screen, Just kind of bring it together. We focus on the eternality of God. God is forever. He is the Lord. He is our dwelling place. He is from generation to generation. He is the God that literally is sovereign before the creation of the mountains, before the coming forth. And when you breathe, the world into existence, you are from everlasting to everlasting. So once you discover who God is, you're going to discover who you are. Verses 3 all the way into verse 12, you're going to see who the people of God is. And the people of God are in trouble. The people of God were in trouble. And I'm going to say this again. This is the guy, we're speaking about a guy that he did not get to enter the promised land. Does anybody know why he did not make the promised land? Because verses 3 through 11 through 12 is basically his own description. Are you following what I'm saying? In other words, the God of the scriptures, who is Lord, who is the everlasting God, who is my dwelling place, the God of the scriptures, who created the mountains and he brought forth the world, the God who is from the Alpha and the Omega, is also the God who's going to hold me accountable. And apparently Moses is not going to make it to the promised land because of sin. The entire generation who left Egypt are not going to make the promised land because of rebellion, because of sin, except for two guys. Anybody remembers who the two guys are? Joshua and Caleb. But everybody else is out of the picture. So from this experience of seeing who God is, describing who we are, now here's what I want to invite you to focus on, the gospel presentation. The gospel says, verse 13, relent. Relent. It is a plea before the God of the Bible that says, relent, Lord. In other words, I recognize my situation, my status. I recognize that 2018 hasn't been an easy year. I recognize that 2019 looks a little shaky, and for some of us, it's uncertain. For some of us, we sometimes fear what is coming our way. But here's what he says. I want you to relent, Lord. I'm going back to focus my attention on you, and this is what I want you to, I want you to wrestle with me. How long will it be? How long will it be? In other words, I recognize that we're broken. I recognize that we sin, Moses is saying. I recognize that we are far from being where we're supposed to be. So teach us, shape us, forgive us. But he's asking the question, how long will it be? Have you ever asked that question? How much longer? You promise and you haven't delivered the goods. Look at what he says. Have compassion. And look at the language. Now he's moving into a different view of themselves. What would be the opposite of servants? Masters? They make the mistake to think that they were masters. They make the mistake that the people of God, they thought that they could create some sort of a loophole before the presence of God. Moses comes up and says, hey, we are your servants, so please have compassion on us. I hope in 2018 has been a year where you can openly and unapologetically speak of the compassion of God. Now, let me ask you to think with me for a second what compassion is. Because if you think about compassion is the ability to take the character of God from simply a concept, a definition, a statement that you can read from a book or the Bible in this case, some sort of a description that you were introduced when you were a little kid, or maybe the experience that things that we just sang together from a hymn book into a worldview, into something that becomes the filter how we make decisions. So as you think about your kids and your grandkids, and for some of you even your great grandkids, listen to me for a second. As we pray for the compassion of God, compassion is simply having the ability to see the character of God and to pray as a servant of God as a world view. You cannot label yourself as a servant. You have to let your decision-making and your perspective of life describe whether you and I are servants. And that implies that this servant attitude, this worldview, has to be reflected in our ability to trust God. And this is why last week, if you were with us last week, I told you that faith is simply the ability to trust in the trustworthiness of God. That although you may be in a season where you are asking the Lord to relent, you're asking the Lord openly and said, how long will that be? You may be in a place where you are begging for the mercy and the compassion of God. here's what I will tell you. Moses is the type of leader that in spite of what is going on, in spite of him being the giver of the law, the principles of the scriptures, Moses has learned that the Bible only makes sense if it's changing, shaping, reflected on how we make decisions. So I'm going to say this one more time. Compassion from God is simply the ability not to restore my life, not to restore my health, not to restore the year and give me a better year. We hope and those things happen. But compassion is simply having the ability that my worldview reflects the worldview of the Lord. Now, once again, this is Moses. We don't know exactly when he wrote these words, but my assumption, my thinking, and especially because we obviously believe that he didn't know he was going to make it to the promised land. But if you remember the promised land is a land with a lot of tribes and nations. What's the point? That God from the very beginning told them to remain faithful to him in a very exclusive relationship to him. When they went after other deities, and especially as they walk into the promised land, the challenge for these people is that they were going to forget that they were the servants of God, and they were going to start worshiping other gods. They were going to forget the compassion of God, watch this please, by seeking or maybe disregarding what would be the opposite of compassion? Wrath? They didn't take God for real. So all that I'm trying to tell you is that Moses is asking verse 13 with the understanding that this people, the people of God, were about to be encountered and discipled by the worldview of other nations, which is idolatry. So as you think about 2019, regardless of how 2019 shapes and comes into existence, the point that Moses is making is that whatever comes in 2019 must be faced, must be processed, must be experienced through the worldview of the God of the Scriptures. And ironically, in our concept, in our world today, most people believe in God doctrinally, but most of the time is detached on life decisions, on how we process this experience. So Moses closes by simply saying this: if you're going to embrace the worldview of God in this coming year, if you're going to embrace the worldview of God as you possess the land for the people of God, here is what it means. That you're going to be, what is the opposite of satisfied or satisfaction? Have you ever seen someone unsatisfied? Have you ever seen someone that always sees the glass half, what is it? Empty versus the glass half. In other words, it's a situation that instead of begging the relenting of God, instead of asking how long it will be, is the person that from servanthood becomes entitled. Is the person that when he and how he negotiates and does relationships with people and with God, is the person that instead of asking for compassion, is demanding compassion. Anybody tracking what I'm saying? So when you and I move into that mode, and by the way, what I'm describing to you, typically we do not see that in the mirror. We don't see pride. We don't see, you know, greed. We don't see self-indulgence in the mirror. We always have a way to excuse why we feel the way we feel, to the point that instead of changing our worldview, we expect for people and even God to change their worldview. They better believe what I believe. They better see life the way I see life. Well, in this case, Moses is, once you are transformed by the worldview, by your decision making, by your essence, not just your circumstances, that implies that you're going to be satisfied. Not because things are going to improve or get better for you. Not because, in this case, not because you're going to enter the promised land. Moses doesn't know that he's not going to enter the promised land. But not because God is going to simply deliver the goods that you expected him to deliver for you. But he says, I want you to satisfy us in the morning. And the way you satisfy us in the morning is with what? In other words, watch this, please. If you stop being a servant of God, if you stop asking and seeking the compassion of God, and if you stop asking for the relenting of God, what's going to happen is that now you're going to see the love of God as a love that is conditional. And I'm telling you, I told you this last week if you were here, that the love of God, which is unfailing, please listen to me, unfailing love of God is not a synonym that the relationship with God is simply unconditional. Unconditional love always gives you conditional relationships. And from day one, Moses gave them the law, not to control them, but to protect them. So the relationship between God and the people of God was conditioned to experience the unfailing love. So the best way my kids can experience my love, the best ways they can see my love is when they follow rules. It's not when they do whatever they want. Tracking? You go to the doctor, and the best way that the doctor can benefit your life is when you follow the prescription. If you don't follow the doctor's instruction, what are you doing? You're going to come back and say, well, this doctor is not good, or you're going to blame your age, or you're going to blame the genes that your parents gave you. You're going to blame everybody except understanding that the unfailing love of God is so we can, through God, in God, by God, being satisfied, that we may sing. Look at this. That the unfailing love of God is experienced in song for, what's the opposite of joy? Mourning? Grief? Now, think about it for a second. Because I just told you a while ago, about 2.7 million people left Egypt. 2.7 million people. That's a lot of people that left Egypt into the promised land. If this is written at the end of the journey of 40 years, think about it, 40 years, do the math. Because once the people of God fail, once the people of God try to find satisfaction by creating at the beginning through Pastor Aaron, Moses' brother, they did a collection offering, put all the gold together, they burned the gold, and they built a golden, and they worship it. So they tried to find the satisfaction by worshiping something else. Tracking what I'm saying? Once that happened, watch this. It was very simple. God looked at Moses and says, Moses, get out of the way. I'm going to kill these people, and I'm going to bring forth a brand new generation through you. Moses said, please have compassion on them. Don't kill them. So God extends the compassion for 40 years, and yet they are not allowed into the promised land. Here's my point. The point that I'm trying to make is, when it comes to joy, if I'm the pastor of this church, 2.7 million members, Moses is a pastor, and the goal is to take 2.7 million people approximately and kill them in 40 years, I have to do 15,000 funerals a year to kill 2.7 million people. In 40 years. That's the math. So if anybody knew about grief, it's Moses. Can you imagine 15,000 funerals as a pastor? That's a lot of funerals. That's a lot of grieving. And Moses says, when you are satisfied in God, that comes in using the language of chronology, because we're limited by time, God is not, in the morning with this unfailing love. And again, unfailing love, the first 40 years, Prince of Egypt, the second 40 years, the guy as a fugitive, shepherding the sheep. In the last 40 years, as the leader of the nation, the founder of the nation, he says, we're going to sing for joy and be, how are we going to be, we're going to be what? See, if I were the one writing this, I will say this. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love by allowing us to enter the promised land and killing everybody, and now we're in charge. That's not what the Bible says. What does the Bible say? That the unfailing love is that, here's the love of God, that we're going to be able to sing for joy versus mourning. That we're going to be able to be glad all of our, regardless of what happens. Not because God owes me, not because what God is going to do for me brings satisfaction, but regardless of what happens, I'm going to sing for joy. I'm going to be glad of our day. So please, just listen. I'm fixing to end this whole conversation. Listen to me for a second. Can you imagine you and I? Now, I don't know where you see yourself on the three blocks of Moses. I don't know if you're in your, you know, before, on your first 40 years of life. I don't know if you're in your second block of 40 years of life. I don't know if you have crossed and you are beyond 80 on your life. But we just read on the previous verses that it's 70 at the most, 80 that we get to live on this earth. Tracking what I'm saying? Watch this, please. Listen to me for a second. Can you imagine that whatever time we have left, He doesn't know how much time he has left. Whatever time you may have left on this world. Can you imagine if your task and my task, my goal, on whatever window of time we have left, is for us to live a Christian experience of satisfaction versus complaining, always in disagreement, always griping, tracking with Sam, satisfaction because of his unfailing love. And can you imagine training, discipling, raising a generation of middle-aged people, young people, babies, that they have learned to sing for joy and that they have learned to be glad all of their days? Because here's what I know. I won't be here forever. I won't be here all of our days. Tracking what I'm saying? My job is not to guarantee a life for my children or grandkids that there will be no mourning. They will go through mourning. Some of our kids are going through mourning. Our country is going to go through mourning. And most of it is going to be like this people, self-inflicted, because we have tried to satisfy ourselves on someone or something else. Anybody tracking what I'm saying? So all that I'm trying to ask you this morning is, if you and I make a commitment to be satisfied in the character of God, by knowing or rediscovering his unfailing love, you may fail, I may fail, but he doesn't fail, then the result of that is simply a life of song for joy and a life of gladness all of our days. That implies, in this case, that he is going to make us, what's the opposite of gladness? I don't know about you, but I just don't like to be around people who are not glad. It's like, hello and bye-bye, see ya. I'm like, I'm just glad I don't have to go home with this lady, you know, at 5 p.m. It's the concept of being glad, making the choice for as many days as you have afflicted us, again, the reality of the affliction, for as many years as we have seen, what is it? And I'm going to say it again, I mean, blogs, first blog, second blog, third blog, Moses, first 40 years, what kind of trouble Moses knew the first 40 years? I don't know if you ever thought about this, but Moses, first 40 years, Moses was always the reminder of a massacre. What happened when Moses was born? New babies, born babies, baby boys, what happened to them? Out. So if you are a parent in this time of this generation, when you saw Moses, this Hebrew boy that looked like an Egyptian, because he was the prince of Egypt, when you saw Moses, he was a reminder of the death of your son. Unjust, unfair death of your son. So I don't know if you've ever been in that place where you might be the reminder of a failure, where you have people in your life that typically are reminding you how short of your successes you have been, how 2018 was a failure. Whatever the case may be, look at me for a second. Moses is simply saying, I'm fully aware of the affliction. I'm fully aware of the trouble. I have seen the people of God suffer. I have seen the oppression, 400 years of oppression by the Egyptians. And yet, here's the beauty of the gospel, that in spite of what's going on and how things turn, God promises to make us glad. So I'm going to ask you again, picture a generation that regardless of where this world goes, the direction this nation takes, we find a generation of glad people. That implies that in this concept of the suffering that we go through life is that God always disciplines his people for the purpose of correction. God punishes people that do not love God, that they do not know the unfailing love, for the purpose of destruction. I don't have the time to go into details, but if you think chronologically from the very beginning, the people of God, Egypt, oppresses them, promised land, Philistia, the Philistines oppress them, you know, Goliath, David and Goliath, that's where they come from, and you move into the next generation, now when they establish, and then you get the Assyrians, you move into the next generation, now you get the Babylonians, then you go to the next generation, you see the Syrians, then you see the Persians, then you see the Greeks, then you see the Romans. All of these nations, pagan nations, they are the nations that are eventually are going to be punished by God, and they're going to be destroyed by God. they're going to be used as the tool to discipline the people of God. So when Moses is talking about the affliction, when Moses is talking about the punishment and the trouble and the afflicted, here's the point. The point is that God will discipline you. God will discipline me, because the unfailing love of God, the unconditional love of God, is always a conditional relationship. My invitation this morning, because you will experience one of the two. When you become a believer of Jesus Christ, you will be disciplined for correction. If you don't know Jesus, you will be punished for destroyed. Tracking what I'm saying? Now, I'll be honest with you, because I've been doing this thing for a while, this Christian walk, and as a follower of Jesus. Many times, when you look at this two, you don't feel the difference from one or the other. Many times you see characters in the Bible like Job. Remember Job? How many kids did he lose? Not one, not two, not three, but how many? All of them, 10. You're going to see a guy like Jeremiah that is going to look at God and says, you betrayed me. You called me into this thing of serving you and prophesizing, and you set me out for failure. You're going to see a guy by the name of John the Baptizer, close related to Jesus. He is in prison, incarcerated, and he looks and he sees Jesus and sends someone to Jesus, ask him if he is the one, because I'm incarcerated. I'm unfairly put into prison. And Jesus looks at the messenger and says, you go tell John that I am the one, except your head ends up on a silver, say it with me, silver platter. What's the point? The point is that many times we don't know the difference between the two. We don't feel it. And at the end of the day, Moses is inviting us to simply reflect that we may experience your what? Not our deeds, but your deeds. The point of the story is the works, is the tangible manifestation of God to be shown to your servants. The win is that the splendor of God may be shown to us. This morning, I'm praying, I'm asking the Lord that you will fall in love with the deeds of God and you will rediscover the splendor of God. I know 2018 didn't look very splendory and very, very shiny. I don't know how 2019 is going to look like. I don't know what the deeds of others are going to be. I don't know what your deeds are going to be. But the invitation is that we focus on the God who has the ability to preserve you. That he is going to preserve you if you embrace his deeds and if you magnified his glory. Here's how I want you to pray this morning. I want you to pray over you, over your family. I want you to pray over your children. As you stand with me for a second, would you please stand? I want you to make this your prayer. That you and I pray, may the favor of the Lord our God. Can you read that with me? Let's read it together. May the favor, come on, read it. May the favor of the Lord our God rest on us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Would you pray with me?